This podcast is a part of the Podmania Podcasting Network. Check out podmania.co.uk to check out more of our great podcasts, features, reviews, match ratings and previews spanning the crazy and diverse world of professional wrestling.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Wrestling with Jonas. This is episode 134, and it's another Turnbuckle TV interview. So this is our fifth or sixth Turnbuckle TV interview that we've done, so we're motoring along with our Turnbuckle TV interviews. So after listening to this one, please go back and check our previous interviews, including exclusive interviews with Dave and Ant from DNA Wrestling, CJ Carter, Chantel Jordan, Big F and Joe, Alex Talbot. But my next guest would like me to remind you that his hairstyle is deliberately streamlined and aerodynamic. His beard is a shock-absorbing tactical master cushion, and he is soon to be celebrating certain success in the VIP room of a nightclub you could not get into. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back and enjoy the Elliot Jordan experience. So how was that, Elliot? Did I do it right?
Yeah, you did well. You did well.
Oh, that was good. Thank you. I enjoyed that. But how are you? Thanks for coming on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast.
No, yeah, thanks for having me. I'm good as I can be. Yourself?
Yeah, very well, very well. Not too bad. Busy, but great to be speaking to you and great to be adding you to the list of Turnbuckle TV interviews, of course. But let's talk about that introduction then, because it's something that's become synonymous with you. It's become part of the Elliot Jordan experience character. And it's not quite as lengthy as the David Starr introduction, but when did that introduction come about? How did it come about? What was the kind of the genesis of it? There must be a story behind it, Elliot.
Story behind it. It's all down to Colin, the Kamikaze Pro announcer. When it came up with the character, realised the entrance had to be, it had to match what the character's about. And Colin just came up with the idea. Come up with it in about 5-10 minutes, tried it out a couple of times, and it just worked. We've just stuck with it ever since. We're going to add bits to it, hopefully, as time goes by.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. And yeah, I did have to practice that a few times before this podcast. And for anybody listening, this wasn't take 25. I did that in the first take, didn't I, Elliot? It was all right. Quite pleased with myself there. But one more thing for you, Elliot. One more thing. In honour of my guest, it's only fair that I do this interview without my baseball cap on. And there we go. So we're twins. The likeness is shocking.
It is. My bits have actually gone down a lot since I ended up completely shaving my beard off a couple of weeks ago with the lockdown and that. So it's still the tactical master cushion, and by the time I get back in the ring, it'll be what it was. But
my head's all cold now. I might put my baseball cap on if it gets any colder. But there we go. But I got to ask you, you know, before we get into your career and you know, all the many highs that you've had as a pro wrestler, because I think you've just surpassed your fifth anniversary as a pro wrestler, if I'm not mistaken. But let's go all the way back to when you were a wrestling fan, when you first came across pro wrestling. Was you a wrestling fan from an early age, or was it something that you came on kind of in more recent years? Tell us about your kind of wrestling fandom and when you first struck eyes on professional wrestling then, Elliot.
It's a little bit of both, to be honest. When I was a kid, I used to have on the good old PS1. I had like the Smackdown 2. We didn't have Sky in my house, so I was never really exposed to it or anything to be a big fan when I was a kid. And the closest I got was WCW. Used to be on Friday nights. I believe it was Channel 5 at 7 o'clock. I'm sure I can remember seeing Rey Mysterio on that, though. And even from that little bit of exposure when I was a kid, I really loved it. I just wasn't exposed to it enough. But then when I was at university in my second year, me and the lads from Halls, we moved into a house together, and we got Sky. And I believe before we're going out for a night out, or maybe when we're just coming from one, with it being American and that, Raw was just on. Started watching it. They were fans when they were kids, so they were getting into the novelty, and I was watching. It was the first time I'd actually watched it, on TV or anything. And we set the series record on Sky Plus and just kind of got into it, and it built up to, remember, it was 2010, a bragging rights pay-per-view. I say pay-per-view, it was free on Sky Sports, but we watched that. And from there, I just really loved it. I was in awe of it, and became a fan from there.
Yeah, yeah. Were there any kind of wrestlers from that kind of period when you start getting back into it? You said you was in second year at uni. You gravitated towards? Do you have any kind of like wrestling heroes or from back 10 years ago? Or do you have any wrestling heroes in general?
Yeah, I suppose from when we're watching it, like the first people who me and my housemates kind of got into was, I was a big Edge fan, and then we loved The Miz. It was when he was doing his first, like, the whole awesome with Alex Riley and that, going up to his W titles. We really enjoyed that. But funnily enough, the person who I liked most of all was Heath Slater. When he first came in with the Nexus, all the way through to his one man rock band stuff, I was a massive Heath Slater fan.
A wasted talent, in my opinion. Should have done a lot more with him, but when he was on screen, he definitely gave it everything. He's really, really entertaining. But when did you take that big step into wanting to become a pro wrestler then? So you kind of came back into pro wrestling as a fan about 2010. Was it much longer after that when that light bulb moment happened and you decided, yeah, I want to kind of try my hand at this and maybe become a pro wrestler myself? When did the training start then, Elliot? When did that light bulb moment happen?
It wasn't too long after, to be fair, because I can't remember what pay-per-view it was, but there was a pay-per-view on, and we decided to buy it. And a couple of the guys who were on our course at uni, they were wrestling fans, so they ended up coming around to watch it. And we just got talking, and it turns out one of them used to train at this local place in Middlesbrough where we were.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, like, back then I didn't even know there was like an indie scene or anything. So when I found out about that, I was like, this sounds like something I could go to, could enjoy this. For some reason, I didn't end up going for a couple of months. And then I got a job at the Walkabout in Middlesbrough. And the cleaner there, really nice guy, like big, huge. I think he was he was from somewhere in the Caribbean, so you can imagine, like 6 foot something, big guy. And he trained at a local place, and he was still actually training there. And he just says, why don't you come down one time, give it a go. And I did, and literally, it sounds cliche, but from the first second, I was just hooked on it.
You started your training in Middlesbrough then, and how soon before you moved down to Birmingham then to start your training or to commence your training with Kamikaze Pro in their dojo then? When did you kind of start training with Kamikaze?
Well, I was in Middlesbrough from 2010. I moved to Birmingham in 2014 in the January. Because I knew that there was going to be better opportunities down here, and if I wanted to do wrestling and take it seriously, needed to come down. So I came down. I was here about two weeks, and I saw a Kamikaze poster. Got in touch with them. I think the dojo was like just about to start at the time, so I really timed it well.
Yeah.
Went along to the first session there, and that's just where I've been ever since. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the Kamikaze Pro Dojo, it's headed by Marshall X, and a fantastic team down there. But tell us about kind of when you first stepped through the doors of the Kamikaze Pro Dojo. I mean, were they quite welcoming? Were you nervous? How were them first few sessions?
No, it was really cool. It was really, really cool. It was in it wasn't what I expected, because when the place I trained in Millers, it was just a little garage sort of thing, but there was a ring. So I turned up, it was at this like local sports stadium, so they had the big athletics track on the outside, and then this little like hall, which was just like more leisure centre, five-a-side pitch. So we were in there, and I remember there was Pete Dunne was taking the first session, Ryan Smiler turned up.
Yeah.
Marshall X was there, obviously. But I didn't know at the time, I didn't actually know Marshall X. Didn't know who he was, or that he ran, or that he runs Kamikaze. So there's all the new trainees, and I'd only been in Birmingham a month, so I knew no one.
Yeah.
Everyone, it was the first session, so everyone didn't. A few people knew each other, but there must have been about 30 people there, and everyone was just so welcoming to each other. It was really cool. It was a really cool place, and it was such a lot. It was a lot of fun as well. That's probably the best thing about Kamikaze. Every single training session I've had with them, it is just fun. It's serious training, but there's like the family camaraderie and stuff that's been there from day one.
Yeah. And I mean, I wanted to focus on kind of Marshall X just for a little bit, because he seems to have been so influential in so many careers and so many people that have gone through the dojo over the years. You know, I had Chantel Jordan on the show a couple of months ago, and she was full of praise for the dojo and Marshall X in particular, about how influential he's been on her character and wrestling style. How crucial is that dojo, and maybe Marshall X in particular, being in general towards your career, and especially those first few years when you were kind of finding your feet?
He's like a guardian angel to us, to be honest. Like you've got a constant stream of support no matter what, but is the best thing I can say about Marshall X, and if he sees this, he'll probably laugh. He'll be laughing. He'll agree. But he's a dick. obviously you've got to be able to take criticism and stuff. And he will.
Yeah.
If you're doing something bad, he'll tell you. But he tells you just his personality is just suited to coaching and training people and stuff. He's gifted.
Yeah. And was he kind of influential towards your character, your gimmick? Is he kind of giving you a helping hand as far as your character development is concerned? And give us a bit of a background towards the name, the Elliot Jordan Experience. Did he give a helping hand towards that as well?
Yeah. It's funny. I remember... I'll have to go back to the first character I had when I came to Birmingham. First debuted for Kamikaze was the Wolf of Broad Street, Elliot Jordan.
Like, nice.
Possibly a play on Wolf of Broad Street and that. And yeah. I think when it was all my ideas, I think when I first thought of it, I hadn't even had like a proper match, and not even just a match like in training or anything. So I didn't really understand kind of wrestling and characters and all that, I suppose. So I did that character for when I debuted in 2015, for about a year and a bit, maybe about 2 years, let's say. And it had potential and stuff, but I think because my art just wasn't in it, I wasn't really enjoying that character, I suppose, sort of thing. And I remember I was sitting there, and funnily enough, we were at Marshall's flat, and we were just talking about stuff, and he just came out with, I think we need to give you a new character. And my latest set of gear, it funnily enough had the Elliot Jordan Experience wrote on the front. And I think I'd come out to a match, and I randomly says, "Oh, this is it's time for the Elliot Jordan Experience." And we were thinking, and the reasoning was, if you get everyone to refer to you as the Elliot Jordan, like commentators, announcers, like everyone, I won't answer to like Elliot Jordan, you have to be referred to as the Elliot Jordan Experience. It just adds something. I think it just adds something to the name, sort of thing. And he turned around to me when he says, "Oh, we need to get you a new character, man. It's got to be something to do with the fact you're bald and you have a beard." Because one thing, the fans invented the Elliot Jordan experience, really, because one thing they've always latched from my debut back in 2015 is the upside down head. So thank you, wrestling fans. Like, I'm the devil that they created. So
there you go. So it's down to the Kamikaze Pro fans that. There we go. Tell us about some of the other trainees at the dojo currently. Then, who should we be keeping an eye on at the Kamikaze Pro Dojo that is really kind of taking the dojo by storm and possibly professional wrestling by storm in the future?
Luke Douglas, 100%. I think I've known Luke for about four and a bit years now. We've gone through a lot together and stuff, and going to different places to wrestle and that, obviously building close relationship and training. But over the last year and a bit, we've been bled, so I've been tagging with him a lot. On both the live shows and the main shows. And then he can hold his own. He's fantastic in the ring. He's a really good worker. But then you look at him and the matches he's had, him and Clint versus Spike Trevet, Jimmy Havoc, death match. He had a really good match with Bram, no DQ. You mentioned Chantel. I appreciate the hardcore stuff and that, but if I had to choose a type of wrestling to watch, that wouldn't be my number one choice. What they do is tremendous. And Luke versus Chantel, that's one of the best matches I've ever seen live. Chantel giving Luke a Canadian Destroyer from the top rope through a table covered in thumbtacks.
Ouch.
Like, fair play to him. So Luke's my boy, but I've got to say, yeah, 100% Luke Douglas. And you've already mentioned Chantel Jordan. Yeah. Don't even think I need to say anything about her. You've got Darice. Darice has been from the dojo and that. He's killing it all around. The Kamikaze Kid, I think in 10 years' time, his name is going to be, he's going to be everywhere and stuff. Like, he's going to be a 15-year veteran by the time he's like 22, I think. So definitely look out for him. You got Deno, who's obviously come over from Croatia. He's good. He's just broken onto the main shows, really, in Kamikaze. He's had a good little run on them.
Yeah.
But everyone from the dojo, the last Kamikaze Pro live show, well, the last few shows, I can't remember the exact numbers, but there's been about 16, 17 people from the dojo on these shows. And these aren't in front of like 20, 30 people. These are drawing crowds of like 150 to the Cadbury Club.
Yeah.
So these are good shows, and they're getting good quality wrestling. Like, James isn't going to put anyone on the card who he doesn't think is good enough to be on the card.
Yeah.
So I think that the fact that the dojo is pulling in good numbers, and there is a lot of wrestling around Birmingham, in the Birmingham area as well. So the fact they're pulling in good numbers, just, it's a testament to Martial Arts and what they've achieved with Kamikaze.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So how long were you training for before you had your first match then, Elliot? What do you remember about that first match? Did you have any nerves before you stepped out?
Oh, crazy nerves, to be honest. It was, I maybe trained in Middlesbrough for about a year and a half while I was finishing off uni and everything, but It wasn't really proper training. Like, at the time, I thought it was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But now I've seen wrestling, I know what wrestling is. So when I came down to Birmingham, I think the dojo started in, I want to say it was about April or May of 2014. And I made my debut in May, my full debut in May 2015, I appeared in the Kamikaze Pro Rumble the month before. But my debut was at Gatecrasher Birmingham. It's called Prism now, but I don't know if you know it. It's like it's the biggest nightclub in Birmingham. So it was a really, really big venue, really cool venue to be wrestling in for the first time. And it was me versus the Polish Punisher Mika, versus Amari in a triple threat. And triple threats are hard. Like, I'd rather be in a six-man, an eight-man, a tag. And triple threat's probably the match I'd least want to be in.
Why is that then, Elliot?
I think it's because if you've... Because to keep three of you in the action constantly throughout the whole time, and it's be entertaining and stuff, I think it's just so hard. It's so easy to do the two bad guys, one good guy in the kit and do that, or have one person always on the outside. But yeah. I just don't buy it and things. So I'd much rather be in a singles or don't get me wrong. I've had some triple threats that I've really enjoyed, and I think. I say that I don't like them, but then when I have the match and I come backstage, I always love it, and that's all. Give me any match, really, but
not your favorite.
Yeah, not my favorite, especially not for a debut match. So it was good. I mean, we had a lot of time to go over things, and obviously Marshall X was like the road agent on the match and things. Just going into it. I was really, really confident in that up until I get to the venue and things. And then we're all good friends. All the dojo guys were there to support us and things. And we're going out for the match, and I see El Ligero and Pete Dunne walking up the stairs to the venue. I'd like another level above with a balcony on. And I heard them say, oh, they're going up to watch the match and that, because everyone thinking, oh, it's three trainees making the debut in a triple threat. This is going to be funny. And so I was bricking it and stuff. Absolutely bricking it. And I remember I had like this wrist tape on my arm. And as I made my entrance and I go up onto the turnbuckle, striker pose and that, wrist tape just completely comes off and that, and it's just trailing all down my arm. And I turn around and Joel Allen, the referee, just looks at me and he's like, oh, what you got on? You got toilet paper on and stuff. So nothing was helping, really. The match went really well. And I got backstage. Everything was fine in that. We ended up having a really cool, really good night, like a celebratory night out in Gatecrasher. Marshall X, funnily enough, speared me on the dance floor. While I had a title belt wrapped around me, I gave Robbie X a German suplex on the dance floor and actually got up and fed into the spear. Don't try this at home, kids. We were professionals. No, it was good. And one really cool thing was a bit of feedback we got. El Ligero had spoken to James. And he openly said that they all thought it was going to be a bad match, but everyone who was watching it up top was really impressed. So I think once I'd got over that first match, from there I thought everything was good. Yeah, I was really, really happy with the first match.
Yeah. So did they have Kamikaze Pro live shows back then to help the dojo trainees, or did they just have the Kamikaze Pro main shows? I mean, how did it work 5 years ago?
So they had the main shows, obviously, and they got when they first opened the dojo, they always wanted it to lead into live shows. But at the time there was only, I think Amari debuted after about six, seven months in the dojo.
Right.
And then me and Mika came along another 6 months later, we debuted. So there was only really three of us who James had confidence in to go out and do the match. So slowly over time, a guy called Liam Darley, he ended up debuting on the main shows as well. So there was four of us on the shows.
Yeah.
And I think it was just a matter of time until more people got match ready and things. But then as soon as we ran that first show, the first live show it was in,
yeah.
I do believe it was April 17, might be, no, it was definitely in April. I remember the day, April the 10th, but not the show. It was when we ran that. From there, every show, there was more and more people from the dojo coming on.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was going to say, the Kamikaze Pro live shows for the trainees in particular, I mean, they must be invaluable to the trainees nowadays to help them kind of hone their skills and get better at their craft, and to kind of prepare them for the main show, the main roster, I suppose. But, you know, how invaluable do you think they are to yourself and to the trainees having these, you know, the trainee shows, the Kamikaze Pro live shows?
Oh, completely. I mean, the Kamikaze Pro live shows gave me all the confidence I needed to go out to everywhere else, and the confidence I needed to go and do the main shows and things, because it was an audience that had seen me. A lot of the Kamikaze Pro live people are regulars that come back every show, so they saw me growing things. And when I'm wrestling in front of them, that's the place where I'll try new things, and I'll adapt my character and things from their reactions and things. So it absolutely invaluable, the live show forever.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I will say though, Elliot, is the Kamikaze Pro live shows, they've become a bit of a brand of their own, really, haven't they? I mean, you know, they've kind of developed so that they can hardly be described as trainee shows anymore, especially with the talent that's on the shows and some of the matches that we've seen. You know, those Kamikaze Pro live shows, everybody that's on them is pretty much knocking on the main roster's door, aren't they?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I think at first, when they first ran, there were more dojo shows, more trainee, but over time, that, like you say, they are a brand of their own. It's like kind of like an NXT is to W, I suppose. But yeah, if you look at the Kamikaze Pro main shows, I think the last show was a Rumble show, but in positions on the card, proper matches. I mean, I was there, Chantel was there, you had Darice, Luke Douglas, you had Deno came in, there was Mitch, there was Luca, there was the two Aussie, two Kiwi lads, Deadly Sins. Yeah. So that's nine people from the dojo who were on the main card in matches.
That's really impressive. Yeah, really, really impressive. And I know that you've been more of a permanent fixture on the main card, on the main roster of recent years, Elliot, but you still take part in every single Kamikaze Pro live show as well, don't you? So, I mean, is that your choice? I mean, do you kind of like to do that to help some of the younger wrestlers? I mean, you do kind of mix it between the main roster and the live shows. And how do you feel about that? And do you think that you are there to serve a purpose and to maybe help some of the younger stars as well?
I love the live shows. As long as they want me to do them, I'll happily do them. If I'm still wrestling them live shows in 10 years time, I'll be a happy man, to be honest. But yeah, I think I do kind of feel like I need to give something back to the dojo sometimes on the live shows, just as one of the most experienced guys in that locker room.
Yeah.
And you do have to kind of like step up and be kind of a locker room leader sort of thing. It's nice to I know that Kamikaze have that faith in me. I had about four matches in a row where I was somebody's first match. So that was cool to go out with them and have their first match, like some really cool experiences and things. Yeah. But yeah, I'll do the live shows as long as I can.
Yeah, it sounds like you get a real kick out of doing the live shows and being on the main roster as well. But I have to speak to you about one match in particular, one opponent in particular. And didn't you wrestle Chantel Jordan, I think, last August on a Kamikaze Pro live show? And didn't she kick the living hell out of you? Wasn't there 36 consecutive kicks to the chest when you were down on your knees? Elliot, those kicks look devastating. How did you cope?
I didn't cope. That's all. I coped by not coping. 77 kicks in that one.
In that one match?
In just the one.
Really? Right. Wow.
I love that match, to be honest. Like, Chantel genuinely is my little sister in wrestling. Her brother's like my little brother. Like, I call her mum, my second mum. Just the amount of time I've spent with them on road trips and stuff, and just talking to them and being around them at training. Like, they are a couple of great, they're a great couple of kids and a great family and stuff. So to get up and get to wrestle Chantel and to be on one of the live shows was really cool. I do believe it was one of her first, I think it was in like one of her first 10 matches or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, she kicks and she hits hard, like hard. I think my chest was just completely. I've had a couple of matches, with her since then as well. We've done that one on the main show. We've wrestled at Wolfram Pro Wrestling. That was fun. We did have another one. We were supposed to be wrestling each other in July as well. But that obviously, with the lockdown and stuff, that show got postponed.
Fingers crossed.
I'm looking forward to kicking her in the head again. There's actually a really cool picture wrestlography took at a live show. It's in a roulette rumble, and I'm literally standing there. I've got her arm in both my hands, and my foot's just on her face. Sorry, I've got her arm in one arm, my foot's just on her face. I'm pointing to her head, and I'm just smiling as she's lying there, writhing in pain. Great photo.
You don't want to piss her off, Elliot. She'll just come back twice as hard. You know that, don't you?
Not to me. She won't.
But I mean, you know, we've had Chantel on this show, and she's going to be a major star for the future. Major star. Incredible to think she's only, 16. But I mean, just speaking of intergender matches, then, Elliot, so you've mixed it up with some of the best wrestlers in the UK. You know, we've spoken about Charlotte. We look at Chantel, Lana Rostin, Millie McKenzie, you fought as well. You're obviously a big proponent of intergender matches in general. But would you like to see more promotions try their hand at this and, you know, possibly have women go for more of the male, traditional male titles? You know, we've got Tessa Blanchard as the Impact world champion over in the States. You know, we've already established that a lot of the women, they strike a lot harder than some of the men. So intergender matches, you know, we know that you're a big fan of it. Would you like to see more of it?
Yeah, I would like to see more of it. I think there's different stories. So many different stories you can tell. There's so many great characters who people would like to see get in there and mix it up and things. So I think it definitely needs to. Yeah, definitely does.
Yeah. It's so many possibilities, isn't there, with intergender wrestling? And, you know, why not give one or two women a crack at some of the main men's championships that are out there and see what they can do? But I'm definitely all for it. But another match I want to talk about is you had a match against Clint Magera at Shots Fired back in March 2018, didn't you? Now, that was for Clint's Kamikaze Pro Championship, and it was in a no DQ match. Now, it was a pretty wild match, very memorable for you, because not only was it for the title, but it was a no DQ match as well. I think that was your first no DQ match. Tell us about that experience and any memories that stick out about that match, because it must have been pretty special for you to be involved in a title match, but it was pretty wild, wasn't it?
It was. That's probably my favorite match I've ever had, to be honest, that one. I remember I found out about it at the show before. I was just standing there, and James says, "Oh, you versus Clint on the next one for the title." And I was like, "Oh, because I know the wrestling's what wrestling is and that, but I'm always a believer that titles, to me, that main title on a promotion does it means something in that."
Yeah.
So to find out I was getting a challenge for it was. It was a cool moment for me. It was the first time I challenged for the big belt in Kamikaze. Then I found out it was a no DQ match. That was I was just thinking, oh, no DQ won't be too bad. But then I'm against deathmatch worker Clint Margera. And I was just thinking, oh, what we could do, like what I could take and things. And Marshall says to me, he goes, oh, you need to get some thumbtacks in your head. You're gonna have to get DDT or take tornado DDT into thumbtacks and then and kick out and that. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, that'd be cool, but I'm gonna have a load of thumbtacks in my head and things. But then we get to the match. On that day it had completely been snowing. Completely snowed under, almost like there's a couple of feet of snow outside of the venue, all piled up. So lo and behold, we decided to go out, and I got body slammed into the snow. And I remember, as soon as I hit the snow, I was gasping for breath, because I'd gone from being under the lights inside, like boiling hot, to I'm now in a pile of snow. Some fans started kicking snow over me and that, and I could barely move. When Clint came over and picked me up, I was relieved, if anything, and I ended up having a couple of snowballs off Clint. I missed one, hit the ref right in the face. He didn't really look impressed. But then the thumbtacks came out, and I was lying on the outside. I was lying in the ring, sorry, and I saw Clint just. I saw him pour this bag of thumbtacks all over the ring. I hadn't taken them before, so I was pretty nervous and thinking about doing it. And I remember I ran in, he jumps up, turns it into the tornado DDT, my head goes straight into him. And that's that. And obviously I was, because I'm streamlined and aerodynamic, I've got no hair to absorb sweat or anything, so this sweat's dripping down my head. And I'm thinking, oh, this is blood. Oh, this is the coolest thing ever. So it just didn't. I didn't feel like I had loads of things sticking out of my head. He pinned me, kicked out at 2.9. The crowd were really, really into it. And then they started chanting, "He's got thumbtacks in his head. He's got thumbtacks in his head." To a much better tune than I've just done there. Yeah, started chanting that, and there was a minute later, I just low blowed Clint, hit my finisher on him, streamlined aero driver. He just barely kicked out of that, so I was literally 0.1 of a second away from winning the title and that. He ended up Death Valley driving me through the thumbtacks, so I went through the thumbtacks twice. Favorite match ever. Remember lying there after he'd obviously pinned me, got the victory. He rolls out of the ring after he'd walked through the curtain. Remember the crowd just gave it a standing ovation as I sat up and got out of the ring. Meant so much. I felt like that was the time when I really felt like I actually belonged and was in the right place. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting and a fantastic story and a great match. I've only been able to see highlights, unfortunately, but I know if I kind of prick myself with a thumbtack at Christmas, putting up the decorations, it bloody hurts. I can't imagine having thumbtacks drilled into your head. But all credit to you, the fantastic match, it really, really was. I'm so glad it's your favourite. But let's talk about, you're the current Kamikaze Pro Relentless Division champion. I've got it down as 528 days. It could be a day or two out, but it's probably 530 something, I don't know. But you're the longest reigning Relentless champion for Kamikaze Pro. You managed to defeat David Starr a couple of Decembers ago, December 2018. You've been champion ever since. That was the same night when he defeated Sean Custom and then went on to face you in the final match of the night. Tell us what it was like. Tell us about that experience of not only facing David Starr. I mean, let's be honest, one of the best wrestlers in the whole world, but also becoming champion of a title that you still hold today.
It was just an amazing experience. I think just to see how good it was, I'd have to go back a bit. So when I can't remember exactly what happened first, there was a time when it turned for me in Kamikaze that I just went on a unbeaten run. I beat some big names in British wrestling at the time. Ligero. I've literally gone blank now. Who it was, but yeah, went on an unbeaten run for a few months, and it was building up to. I wasn't getting my title shot. I wasn't getting this, and then I found out I was in the ladder match. Got to tick that off my bucket list, and then they come up to me before the show and says, "Are you winning? You're winning the Bank on It briefcase. You're going to win this. You're going to cash in a couple of shows' time. Take the relentless belt." So they laid it all on a plate for me. So I got to go out, have the last match, which is also one of my favourite matches I've ever had. Even though I was the only bad guy in it. I got absolutely battered. But then when I turned up for the show, when I was cashing in, it was literally all I could think about all day, days leading up to it and things. Because I'd seen so many captions happening on TV and stuff, and that I was just feeling, oh, that's going to be me. So we went out, and I remember as soon as I'd actually pinned him and won the belt, I was sitting there. Sounds cliche in that, but I really couldn't believe it had happened. And then I see Luke, he slides into the ring. So he'd been out there, he'd helped me win the title. He slides into the ring and literally just gave me a hug. And he says, "Oh, you deserve this." And got backstage, and it probably my favourite moment in wrestling, because obviously with it being Kamikaze, that's where I started, that's where I came up. So I do, to become like the first person from the dojo to hold a belt on the main roster, it really meant a lot that they had that faith into me. And I didn't dream that I'd become a longest reigning. It's been a really, really fun reign. And I'd just like to point out that I am the longest reigning, and I was the longest reigning before this lockdown started as well. So
indeed. Yeah.
Even when this lockdown gets wiped from the records, I'd still be the longest reigning.
Definitely. And you've been a fighting champion as well. I mean, I've got a list of people that you've taken on and beaten as the champion. You've beaten former champion Sean Custom, of course, Sugar Dunkerton, Mike Bailey, Chief Deputy Dunn. You've even been involved in it in a six-man scramble, so you was up against five contenders there. So you've kind of taken on all contenders. You're not afraid of a challenge or five. So congratulations on your record-breaking reign there. But I want to take you to we had Alex Tolbert, Xander Callaway on the podcast a few weeks ago. Now, he was telling me about a show, Wrestling 4, now where fans queued up around the building to give you knife edge chops for charity. So, Elliot, how did this even start and become a thing? Because it not only did they do it on one show, but I think it became a bit of a tradition, and they did it the following show as well, where you just had fans lined up out of the building ready to give you a chop across the chest in the name of charity. So tell us how that started. That sounds quite fun. Well, probably not for you, not for your chest anyway.
I think me and the guy who had wrestled Kane, he works as 2K, we'd wanted to wrestle each other for a while and things. And I think when we went in that match, we were just thinking, what's the craziest sort of stuff we can do? Like, it's a charity show, everyone is there to have a good time.
Yeah.
And I think he just says, oh, why don't we? Just randomly out of the blue, why don't we just get people to pay to chop you? I thought, oh yeah, cool, that'll be fun. Well, let's see if we can make five or a tenner. And then we get to the point in the match, and I'm outside of the ring. Kane grabs the mic, and he says, "Wait, what we're doing?" And he comes outside and grabs my arms. And I've never seen so many people pull money out of the pocket faster. It was mental. You had people coming up, and these are people who've never thrown a chop in their life. So I'm getting some people are going to try and do a little demonstration. Some people are coming in with a nice one, just like that. Some people were backhanding. Some people were full on like knifing. And then as we got further towards the back of the room, this is where there was a lot of wrestlers there, whether they've been on the show and were just now watching or a few would come along. So I'm thinking, nah, man, get me back to the ring. Like, Talbot, the promoter, he was the guy with the bucket. And now I'm thinking, right, we've got 20 minutes for this match. And he's looking at me and he goes, you're already over time. Just keep going. It don't matter. I was generally trying to crawl back to the ring so people kept grabbing me. And it was so much fun. And I don't know if you're Kenny Kilbane and Jen. Kenny Kilbane, huge guy. So he comes up with Dominita, this big girl as well. They chop me. Oh, it was one of the hardest chops I've ever taken in my life. And people then started paying money, not for them to chop me, for Kenny Kilbane and Dominitas to start chopping me. So, but someone bought me a drink, which was quite cool. So while I am getting bad, someone did pass me a drink, which was really nice. And this genuinely isn't an exaggeration. People were chucking bars in the bucket, they were chucking tennis in the bucket, all loose change. And I can't remember the exact total, but it was over about 250 quid that we raised just in that one spot. But honestly, if anyone can go and watch that show, it's on. I do believe it's on Turnbuckle TV, actually.
I think it is, yeah.
It is a mental match. Like Kane, he comes out with a confetti cannon. So I was like, what about some confetti guns? So he come out on this one, he come out with his cannon and then he come out with two confetti guns as well. And at one point in the match, we're both in opposite corners. We both pick up a gun. And as we're turning back into each other, we bump into each other, turn around. We've both got this gun pointing at each other. So then we back off and it's like a proper Mexican standoff. And you got Steve, the ref, in there shouting at us. And we both just pop each other a few times. These confetti guns, they had a few rounds in them. So we must pop each other about four times. We both go down for the double down. And then Steve's standing there and he's giving it the count. So I sat up and I shot Steve. He didn't go down. So then I'm lying there. I'm thinking, how is Steve? I sat up again. I shot him. I was like, Steve, you're supposed to bump. I've just shot you. So he didn't bump. I think Talbot slid into the ring. He starts doing the count and that. So it's absolutely crazy match, but definitely one you should check out. Definitely.
Yeah, check it out on Turnbuckle TV. And like you say, you raised a lot of money, but your poor chest must be sore after that. But all credit to you, a great sport for doing that. But just changing the subject slightly then, Elliot. So, I mean, it's clear that you're renowned for being a dastardly heel, one of the best heels in the UK. But recently, in certain groups, I understand, you've transitioned from being a heel into a babyface. What's that process like for you? And, you know, what have you learned about your character since you made the switch from heel to face?
I think I do really enjoy playing the face. I wouldn't want to do it every time I wrestle. To do it every now and again in certain places is cool. To be honest, I was really nervous. The first time I played face in the UK was a couple of months ago against Damien Dunn. So I've wrestled in Prague and Poland and Malta, and over there I played the face. I was the English guy and things. Yeah. So it was really easy. I mean, in Prague, I did the head scissors and the crowd were on the feet, going crazy. Like that's the sort of stuff it's like. But obviously I knew in England to be a face, it's a lot different. So the first time I had to play a face over here was at SWA versus Damien Dunn. I turned up. I was going to be a surprise on the card, and I was supposed to be in a triple threat as the bad guy. And then I think Damien's opponent had to pull out with an injury on the day. So the promoter says, "Oh, you're now wrestling Damien. You're going to be the face. You're going to be the good guy." And the main worry for me was, how am I going to be the Elliot Jordan experience, but still be You know what I mean? How am I
exactly? Yeah.
As a good guy, how am I going to get fans to cheer for me as opposed to hating on me? But to be honest, I just went out there and I did pretty much the same thing. Said my head was streamlined and aerodynamic. I kind of acted the same as well. Didn't do anything really dirty in the match or anything. And they changed my announcement. It was pretty much exactly the same, but it was a VIP section that you are all invited to.
I love it.
So it was fun though. The crowd took to it. It was a good match. They got behind me. They got behind me enough that I was brought back for the next show to play a good guy again. I'm hoping it leads to more.
Good. Getting serious for a minute, Elliot. Now I've spoken to Alex Talbot, Dave and Ant from DNA. British wrestling has been in really, really great shape for several years now, as you're fully aware. But, you know, how do you think the British wrestling scene will recover after this pandemic that we're going through, after it's no longer the main focus, of course? Do you see British indie scene, do you see the British indie scene recovering back to full strength? Or do you think that, you know, we'll see some casualties along the way? You know, how do you think things will shake up when this pandemic's out of the way and we've got wrestling shows back on?
I think British wrestling is going to be completely fine, to be honest. I think it's in such a good place at the moment. And I mean, we're all sitting here on lockdown. Everyone wants to be back wrestling. Fans want to go to the shows. Wrestlers want to be wrestling. Everyone wants it to come back. So I think even if we don't get any more wrestling in 2020, when it finally does come back, there's still going to be that passion and that fire for it. So I think it'll be completely fine. We might see a couple of casualties. I really hope we don't. But we might see promotions that don't run anymore, or people that just to lose the heart for it and don't want to go back, maybe. But I think overall British wrestling is going to be fine.
Yeah, I think the fans are just so hungry for wrestling action in general that when the doors open, I think there's going to be some sellout straight away. I think it's going to be popular from day one. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think it's just going to carry on from where it left off. But I'd say people just can't wait to get to a wrestling show. And I'm sure you're probably itching to get back into a wrestling ring yourself, aren't you?
I am. I mean, even though I know by the time I get back in a ring, it'll probably be at training the first time I get back in the ring, but I won't have took a bump in months. So yeah. I'm looking forward to being back in the ring, but I'm really not looking forward to the few days after when I get really, really ached. That's not going to be good.
Indeed. We're coming to the end of the interview, Elliot, but I need to ask you, what would you consider maybe some of your proudest moments of your career so far?
Ooh. Well, fighting the title, that's up there. Winning the Relentless title, that's up there. I think one, probably my proudest achievement in wrestling is the run that I've had on the main show over about the last 18 months. Right up, you know what, if you bear, can you still see me?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Perfect. I'm just trying to work out who it was that I was actually against. I think I'd started on the main shows with Kamikaze, and then when the live show started, I was on then, and the Elliot Jordan Experience was born. And so then when I finally broke back onto the Kamikaze main roster.
Yeah.
I remember I wrestled Jack Stars, El Fantasmo, and then Bram. Three good matches. I was really proud of them. And then the next year, that's when I just went on the run I mentioned. Remember it was Lee Hunter, wrestled him, ended up, because he was hurt, I was hurt. We ended up doing doing an angle sort of thing where I ended up low blowing both of the Hunters. Then it was Clint Margera. Then I wrestled David Starr. That's a moment I'm incredibly proud of, because when first brought Dave up, he actually stayed with me. I put him up for a couple of nights, him and Timothy Thatcher. Absolutely fantastic guy. Got so much time for David Starr. So to then get to wrestle him, and I remember he put out a tweet the day before, and he was like, Elliot's the first guy, the first person I really met coming over here. It's going to be really cool to do the wrestles with him. So that was a really cool moment, and then getting to beat him for the title. Then I wrestled Millie after that. And then it's annoying me so much that I can't remember the matches I actually went on where I won. But the run I went on from Kamikaze to from about 7 months before winning that title and then holding it up until now, that's probably my proudest achievement in wrestling.
Yeah.
I was in Kamikaze. I've been abroad to wrestle. I've been all over the country to wrestle. But when I'm wrestling for Kamikaze, it just feels better. Makes me proud, I suppose. Yeah, I'm proud to come from the dojo.
Yeah, definitely. And just kind of thinking ahead, when things are relatively back to normal, any ambitions, any countries you'd like to visit, any groups you'd like to wrestle for, any wrestlers in particular you'd like to go up against, any ambitions for the future?
I'd like to wrestle anywhere and everywhere, to be honest. If there's a wrestling show, I'd love to be there. Dream opponent probably be... Funnily enough, Heath Slater. I think I'd love to wrestle him. Yeah, Heath Miller, as he's now known. If he comes over to the UK, my streamlined and aerodynamic versus him.
It's gotta happen.
It has to. That'd be the dream.
Listen, Elliot, it's been amazing speaking to you. I really, really enjoyed this interview. Thank you so much for your time. But before we let you go, we have to give you an opportunity to throw out any social media handles. If you're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, where can my listeners reach out to you, say hi, find out more about the Elliot Jordan experience?
Yeah, well, thank you. If you go on my Facebook and Instagram, it is the Elliot Jordan experience. And if you hit me up on Twitter, it is just Elliot Jordan XP. So check me out. Yeah,
there we go. It's been fantastic to have you on the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the Wrestling with Jonas experience.
No. See what you did there. It's been good. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So please keep it tuned to the Wrestling with Jonas experience. So I'll say it again, the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. I might stick to the experience. It's got a ring to it. But if you have enjoyed listening to his podcast, please don't forget to spread the word. Tell your friends and tell your family. Don't forget to hit that ever-important subscribe button on whatever channel you're listening to us on, or maybe YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe. And that way you don't miss out on a single episode. You get the notification, of course. Thanks again to Elliot for coming on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. Thanks again to Turnbuckle TV for being such great sponsors of the show. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll catch up with you all again soon.